and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. He's back on home turf, joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico, the setting for one of the best TV shows ever made, Breaking Bad, the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. And Mickey, this is our last show for 2013. Time flies when we're having fun, doesn't it?
It sure does, Rob.
Yeah, and it's been a fun year with you. And we've had some fun, too, in recent shows focusing on metals that are critical for modern technology today. We've covered gallium, germanium, and indium. This time out, we're zeroing in on tellurium, number 52 on the periodic table. Mickey, fill us in on the characteristics, the history. When was it first discovered?
Well, it's silvery, lustrous, metalloid, soft and brittle. It sits below selenium in the periodic table, and to the left would be antimony, of which it has some common characteristics, and then on the right side would be iodine. Has no characteristics with that poisonous gas. So, anyway, tellurium is very rare in the Earth's crust, about one part per billion. And so it's about the same content in the crust that platinum is, which one of the rarest elements on the Earth. Discovered sometime in the 1780s in Romania and Transylvania, where there's a bunch of metal deposits. It occurs as an alloy with gold in gold tellurides. The name tellurium comes from the Latin for tellus, which means earth.
Okay, you mentioned the relationship with gold in the discovery stage. I believe, though, it's usually extracted as a byproduct, though, isn't it, of copper and lead production?
That's correct. In smelters, it ends up in the slimes of copper and lead smelters, and it's recovered from that, and that's mainly the world supply. It's got eight isotopes, five of which are stable, three are so little radioactive they might as well be stable from essentially the age of the universe to 10 trillion times the age of the universe. So, occurs as a native element occasionally, but usually it occurs in gold, silver, bismuth, nickel, tellurides. Although it's very rare, it has a widespread association with various kinds of base and precious metal deposits.
Okay, and a rather colorful history here too, Mickey, in terms of that great mining district in Western Australia, Kalgoorlie, I believe is how you pronounce the town, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fill us in on that. There was a gold rush there, I believe, back in 1893. A few years passed, then there was another gold rush, and the metal that we're talking about today was part of this story because they ended up using some of the waste, I guess, in the mining activity to fill in potholes and parts of the sidewalks, and just a few years later, when they realized what they'd done, they started ripping the stuff up again.
Yeah, it's it occurs in various combinations with gold and silver and tellurides of a variety of minerals, but they don't look like gold and they don't look like silver. They're generally kind of grayish and dull and prisms or rectangles, crystalline forms. So historically they were missed. In fact, you notice that the gold rush at Kalgoorlie, 1893, would have been one of the last ones ever to happen. Another one that happened in the early 1900s, really the last gold rush in the United States, was at Cripple Creek, and it, again, has gold tellurides. So commonly they weren't recognized as gold-bearing for a period of time, and that's exactly what happened at Kalgoorlie. They finally figured out that Calaverite was a mineral with gold in it. At first they thought it was some sort of pyrite, and they ended up putting it in potholes in the streets and making sidewalks out of the mining waste, and so they went in and dug it all up.
Okay, well, one spot in the world, I guess, where you could say the streets at one time were partially paved in gold, Mickey.
That's true.
Indeed. And something different, Mickey, about this metal as well. We're so used to talking about metals where China is the big gorilla in the room, a major producer. Not the case this time, though, is it?
No, China does produce significant tellurium, but from my research, and it's very hard, it's a very opaque market, because most countries in the world do not report tellurium production because it's byproduct of mainly copper smelting. But the U.S. is thought to be the world's largest producer. Most of the U.S. production comes from the copper refinery of ASARCO in Amarillo, Texas. But China does have a couple of standalone mines. They are probably would not be economic anywhere else in the world, bismuth tellurium mines. But generally, yeah, the U.S. is the dominant producer. We know a lot of it comes from Japan, Russia, Canada, certainly Peru. There's a whole list of countries that don't report tellurium production. Anywhere there's a copper smelter, they're probably recovering tellurium.
Okay, let's talk about the uses. I understand initially and traditionally, I guess, as an alloy additive to steel. But we're talking about these metals a lot from the standpoint of how they are used in technology today, and we are seeing that with the tellurium in terms of the solar cells, right?
Yeah, solar cells have dominated for the last few years. They're used as thin films on the collectors. They're about the most efficient product we have right now at about 11% efficiency, which is not good, but that's about it. That's the best that solar collectors can do right now. Historically, metallurgical alloys were important. They still are. They occupy about 15% of the market. As additives for steel and copper and lead. Another dominant use in the recent history would be thermoelectric devices with bismuth and lead tellurides. And in this application, they're used as thermocouples for when one side heats up, the other side cools down. So, and that occupies about 30% in the market. And then another fairly traditional use would be to vulcanize rubber, often as a substitute for sulfur and selenium in that application. The problem with tellurium is, in the last few years, is the cure for high prices is high prices. They've been quite volatile. My research showed that in 07, the average price was $110 a kilogram. That went as high as $349 a kilogram in 2011. But then everybody started cutting back on their use and finding substitutes, and so the price has gone way down since then. There's essentially no recycling of the metal. The DOE came out, and if memory serves, in 2010, and said it was a critical element for technology. And a lot of this had to do with Obama's subsidy of the solar collector, solar energy industry. But essentially, what happened was there became a rush for tellurium, and the price went up, and now the price has come down. And as soon as the price went up, but lo and behold, a bunch of juniors got on the tellurium bandwagon, and of course, they've all failed now.
Do you have a good read on global production, Mickey, of this metal and whether or
Yeah,
not
it's
it's really
really
high?
hard to determine because it's so opaque. I had a list of four or five countries where you could find production, but I had another list of about probably 12 where they don't report production, but it's generally thought that the world's total tellurium budget on a year-to-year basis is somewhere around 500 to 550 tons, and that's not a lot of material.
No, doesn't sound like an investable commodity.
No, it is not.
Okay, let's wrap it up on that note. Unless you had something else to add, Mickey?
Well, I'll tell one of my little anecdotes again about tellurium, and I mentioned before that it's common with many different types of base and precious metal deposits, although it's so rare. But in the mid-80s, it became very recognized that it occurs with alkalic gold deposits, and Kalgoorlie is one of those, Cripple Creek. Some of the world's giant gold deposits have tellurium in them. So at that point, there was a lab in Vancouver, a single lab, and I won't mention their name, but people probably know who I'm talking about. They're run by a bunch of Chinese people in Vancouver, mm-hmm. and they developed a methodology for analyzing for tellurium in the parts per billion range. And I actually used that successfully to find a million-ounce gold deposit in Montana in the mid-'80s. Used tellurium, once again, as a pathfinder. Mm-hmm. And what we found was in soils, it's very immobile in soils. It forms a hydrated iron oxide tellurium compound, and so oftentimes when you got a tellurium soil anomaly, there was gold with it.
Okay, great story. Nice way to wrap this one up too, Mickey. Next time out, it'll be our first show of 2014. How do you want to ring in the new year?
Well, I think maybe we'll do a review of 2013 and of the major metals and kind of what we see maybe would happen during 2014. Try to do a few predictions about where commodities are going to go.
Okay, well, it's been quite the ride this year, hasn't it?
Not especially. A pretty rough ride this year.
Indeed. All right, well, let's keep our fingers crossed and hope it for a smoother ride in 2014. Mickey, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Have yourself a great Christmas.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob. You too.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.